Hey, it's me, Lars Larson. Thanks for checking out my podcast, and be sure to tell a friend about the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Tuesday, and it's my pleasure to be with you to deliver just a little bit of honestly provocative talk radio. And if you want to join that conversation, we like to call it the best conversation in talk journalism, you're certainly welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. And naysayers always go to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Do you find it kind of odd that there have now been 97 fires or explosions in food plants in America since Joe Biden, quote, won the presidency? We're going to talk about that a little bit later on this hour. Should the U.S. be concerned that South America is on the brink of becoming, well, one big bunch of communist countries? The Supreme Court rules Maine's tuition assistance program must cover religious schools. You can't actually exclude a school because what they teach involves religion. What does that mean for religious liberty? We're going to talk about that as well. And take a moment to cast a vote in my Twitter poll. You'll find the question each and every day at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, since not everybody's crazy about Twitter. I'm certainly not. Should gun owners be forced to buy liability insurance? This is one of those crazy ideas. California, of course, has originated it. California lawmakers have introduced a bill that will require gun owners to carry liability insurance for the specific use of weapons. State Senator Nancy Skinner, Democrat of Berkeley, no kidding, introduced the measure, amended into an existing bill. If the measure is passed into law, it would be the nation's first state to enforce such a rule. The measure would make gun owners civilly liable for anything that happens because of the use of their weapons. Now, that is a, well, it's a non sequitur. Are you currently civilly liable for anything you do with your weapon? Yes, you're already liable, but you're not required to carry the insurance. Do you know what the short version of this is? Elites in government, most of whom are protected by men and women with guns, want to make it more expensive for people to own guns who are just citizens and don't have senator or congressman or representative or governor or some other fancy title in front of their names. If you make it more expensive, who does that benefit? Well, it certainly doesn't benefit the poor, doesn't even benefit the middle class. They say the bill intends to make owning a gun in California more expensive and require additional safety items for all gun owners. That's what they want. They want to make it harder for poor people to be able to protect themselves. And who needs the protection more than that? If you take a look at the crime statistics, you're going to see that most of the bad things that happen, whether it's armed robbery, whether it's burglary, rape, other kinds of crimes, including homicide, where do they happen more often than not? In poor neighborhoods. Where do they happen less often than not? In elite neighborhoods. And now California wants to make it even more expensive for a poor California resident to be able to afford to own a gun and provide his own protection now that the police have been defunded. You can answer the question, should gun owners be forced to buy liability insurance as a consequence of owning a gun? I would say hell no, they should not. You can answer any way you like at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, and always brought to you by the AMAC Group. It's a great group, the Association of Mature American Citizens. AMAC has the conservative values I believe in. I joined the group and you should too. Just go to amac.us or call 888-262-2006. AMAC's better. Better for you and better for America. Oh, and over the weekend. Yes, I saw over the weekend. I took a day off yesterday. Joe Biden crashed his bicycle. He was almost going 0 miles per hour. In fact, I think he was going about 0 miles per hour. He was going very, very slow. A public bike ride on the public beach in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. Trump hit it off the tee 300 yards dead center down the fairway at age 76. Joe Biden can't keep the bike standing up straight under him. That certainly tells us where we're coming from. But the Biden administration, and I mentioned the California law and the idea that you have to buy liability insurance, I think everybody in America should be able to, you know, decide that they want to have insurance or not. And it shouldn't be a matter of whether you have a big fat wallet or a skinny thin wallet. You should be able to exercise your Second Amendment rights. But consider this, the Biden administration has another attack on Second Amendment concerns in America. they've decided that if they can't ban you from owning the pistol or the rifle that you want to own, and I have a dog in the fight because I own several of both, they want to make it impossible for you to find ammunition. Now, here's what they're doing. There is an ammunition factory in Missouri that is legendary. It's the Lake City Ammunition Plant in Lake City, Missouri. And it is one of the biggest producers of ammunition in America. In fact, when I do ads for gun stores, they frequently mention Lake City because they know that people associate Lake City Ammunition Factory as being one of the high-quality factories in America. Well, now the Biden administration effectively wants to say to them, if you still want to produce ammunition for the United States military, which they do, then you can't sell to the public. Now, what's always been the case is the ammo plant is owned by the government but run by a private company, just so you understand the relationship. It's like the fact that in a lot of cities that are port cities, the port property may be owned by the government. It's usually run by a private operator that contracts with the government. And what's always been true, for decades it's been true, that Lake City could make a certain amount of ammunition, primarily the very popular 5.56 millimeter ammunition. It's .223 caliber. There are, and we can get into the differences between .223 and 5.56. They're not important in this discussion. This place has been in operation since 1941, and they produce a lot of ammunition for the U.S. Army. And the government contracts with a private firm, Winchester, to run the enterprise, and they're allowed to sell excess supplies on the open market to happy, healthy, honest, law-abiding people like you and me. And now the Biden administration wants to shut that down. Not the plant. They still want our government to be able to have ammunition. In fact, the IRS just spent $700,000 on ammunition this year. And if you wonder, why do government agencies like the IRS or the BLM, why do they get ammunition, but you want to make it hard for the American public to be able to find it or to be able to buy it? Well, I think you know the agenda there. When you have a government that is afraid of its armed citizens, maybe the government needs to change the way it does business. The government should not be in a position where it makes its citizens fearful of the government. But that's what they're trying to do. To say to Lake City, you can make all the bullets for the U.S. military you want to, but we're not going to let you sell to the general public. That, as far as I'm concerned, is absolutely outrageous. Answer our Twitter poll. You can find it at Lars Larson Show. You can also call the show if you want to weigh in. And if you're a naysayer, you go right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. You can send emails that all come directly to me, talk@LarsLarson.com. We know that communism leads to a very few lucky elites at the top, and everybody else is miserable. So if South America becomes an entirely communist continent, can we expect our southern border to be flooded even more with all those commies coming north? We're going to talk about that coming up next. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. We know that communism almost inevitably, I think always inevitably, leads to poverty for most people and a few lucky elites at the top of the pile. And South America appears to be headed in that direction, including some very notable countries. I thought we'd talk about that with our friend Frank Gaffney, the founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C. Frank, welcome back.
Lars, it's good to be with you always.
So would you mind sketching out for my audience the situation we're up against? Because I thought there was a point during Reagan when we actually had communism pushed back the other direction. But now the whole place, the whole continent seems to be headed the wrong direction. And then after that, they head north and come to the United States, where we seem to be turning both socialist or communist or a little bit of both.
Yeah, it's a pretty grim prospect, isn't it? As it happens, I was addressing a group of Latin American leadership types today and happened to remark that it was Ronald Reagan that was, I think, our last president who really gave focused attention to the continent to our south. And we have engaged in a kind of malign neglect, not just benign, malign neglect, particularly under recent presidents. And I think Donald Trump you know, made some efforts to rectify that, but not enough. And the cumulative effect of it, Lars, is lost in the space of the past year, three critically important South American countries to communists, the nation of Peru, the nation of Chile, and then just this week, the nation of Colombia. And next in store, alas, it seems, is the nation of Brazil. And if we've watched the same thing play out here, where, you know, there's an old story about communist elections. It's one man, one vote, one time. You get somebody elected, all right, but they are never going to relinquish power, and they're going to make sure that everybody else suffers terribly. As you said, you know, you may, if you're part of the small elite, the party, you might benefit at least somewhat, but everybody else is really suffering. And the country as a whole, I think, is going to be suffering, not just the ones that I've mentioned, but others besides, as something called the Forum of São Paulo, which is a kind of contemporary communist international, serves to not only encourage this kind of repression in the countries of our hemisphere, but facilitates the efforts of the Chinese Communist Party, the Russians, and the Iranians to become ever more present in and domineering of the nations of this region. So it's going to be affecting us, and not least, as you said, Lars, and I know you're very alive to this, as those people suffer, more and more and more of them will vote with their feet, as they say, leave these countries and head here. And that's a problem that's already acute enough, as you know so well.
Well, but Frank, how can they sell the idea that socialism or communism is attractive when they've got right on their own continent? We've got Venezuela that is you know, went from one of the richest countries in the world to one of the poorest countries, a place of abject misery. And you say, hey, how would you like your country to be run that way? And I would think that almost anybody who saw it, you know, whether you're rich or poor, would say, no, we don't want to go that direction.
Well, you'd certainly think so, especially in those countries like Peru and like Colombia, which have huge numbers of Venezuelan emigres who have fled there to try to, you know, make ends meet to survive. And it is unbelievable. And the only thing I can say is, Lars, how many times have we been sold the hope and change bilge of the Barack Obamas and more recently the Joe Bidens? And I think there's an awful lot of that going on. The people who are disgruntled, who feel as though the system hasn't been fair to them, are endlessly, you know, susceptible to the temptation that something different is going to be better for them. And even if it looks as though there's a lot of bad things associated with it, they will nonetheless vote for it. And I think you add on top of that, in many of these countries at least, a level of corruption and, you know, fraud in the electoral process. And it isn't necessarily that people have actually bought what they're selling. It's that they've been, induced to go along with the program.
You mean that there are vote counting machines, that vote counting machines in South America that may not be entirely kosher?
I've been told that there are actually some vote counting machines in our own country that may be not entirely kosher, and some of them are the same machines, to be honest.
That was the coincidence I was pointing, but I just, you know, when you look at
there.
I don't expect that every, you know, average person in Venezuela is going to be converted, but that country could be rich again. As I understand their oil revenues and the way they've run their industry into the ground, they said, hey, we're going to take it over from all those evil companies that are ripping you off. The country nationalizes its oil system, And all they do is run the entire plant and equipment into the ground to where it can't produce the wealth it once produced, even though they've got the oil. And with Joe Biden, they've certainly got a customer.
Yeah, they do. And a lot of the world would be at their feet trying to get access to that oil. They can't get it out of the ground because they've done so much damage, as you say, to their industrial plant and base. But the Chinese own a lot of it now, having bought it forward at a very steep discount, and are otherwise, again, exerting their influence in ways that are entirely inimical to our interests, Lars. You know, we've got, as you know, commercial interests there. We've got tourism. We've got people, Americans, who have settled throughout the hemisphere. But we've also got very important security interests. And let me just give you one example. This country, Peru, has now got not one but two very large ports that are in various stages of construction now by the Chinese Communist Party. It is expected that at least one, maybe both of them, will support the kind of carrier battle groups that the Chinese are now building in quantity and will be deploying, you can bet, to advance their efforts to project power, to dominate this region, and to deny it to us.
Yeah.
None of this is good, either for the people here or for our vital security interests.
Including the super carrier that the Chinese just finished launching. Frank, keep up the good work at the Center for Security Policy. We appreciate it.
Will do, my friend. Thank you.
That is Frank Gaffney with us. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Emails talk@LarsLarson.com. Does the current nationwide shortage of infant formula have you asking what's next? Did you know that nearly 100% of America's supply of antibiotics is produced outside the United States, mainly in China and India? And if we can't control our own domestically produced baby formula, what about the life-saving medications produced overseas? Many experts predict if there were a supply chain disruption in the pharma industry, pharmacies could run out of most popular antibiotics in just a matter of weeks. Thankfully, there is a new service to help you provide for such an event. I've taken advantage of it myself. Have you heard of the Jace case from Jace Medical? It's a pack of five different courses of antibiotics that you can use to treat a long list of bacterial illnesses, including UTIs, respiratory infections, sinusitis, and skin infections. Every household needs at least one Jace case. The Larson household certainly has them. Go to Jace Medical right now and use the code word Lars for $10 off on your Jace case. That's code word Lars for $10 off at jacemedical.com. That's J-A-S-E, jacemedical.com. Pleasure to be with you on a Tuesday. Coming up, almost 100 food processing plants damaged or destroyed by fire since Joe Biden took office. Are they deliberate or are they by accident? We'll talk about that coming up next. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Now, I get emails almost every day on a lot of subjects, but on one subject in particular over the last probably month and a half is people saying, Lars, are you aware of all these fires and explosions and other mishaps that are happening at one industry in particular? And that industry is food processing. In other words, it's one thing to grow the potatoes or the corn or the soybeans or whatever it happens to be. It's another thing to actually turn it into food that you buy at the store. And I'm not talking about prepared food. I mean, even if you just want to go to the store and buy some potatoes or buy some beans or buy some peas, it's got to be processed somewhere. It's a huge industry. Now, here's the list put together, and I'll give credit where it's due because we like to do that on the show. I don't believe in doing what Joe Biden does, just stealing things. Michael Snyder, who is with DC Clothesline, points out that over the past few months, he has documented the rapidly growing global food crisis. Now, I've been pointing out to you for months that even Joe Biden, months ago, said we're going to have food shortages, not just in Western Europe, but in the United States as well. And what Snyder points out is that even here in the United States, where we grow food so well, the 22 million acres of farmland we pay the farmers through the Conservation Reserve Program not to farm it. Because at some point, if you grow too much of something, anything, you'll end up collapsing the marketplace for it, and that doesn't make any good sense. So we pay farmers not to farm on 22 million acres, And yet we still produce so much food. We export a lot of that food, and we have no problem feeding our own population. Until perhaps this year, where there are shortages of fertilizer, there is a gigantic cost for petrochemicals, for primarily gasoline and diesel, but also for fertilizers that are made from petrochemicals. All of those things are colliding together along with supply chain to produce a situation where I advise everybody I know and people who listen to this show, make sure that you are prepared with food that is storable food that you can depend on, because we may literally hit that point where, you know, where you go to the store and there isn't any. I mean, there are shortages at stores right now. And one of the first ways you see shortages, I pointed out to people, is when the price of anything goes up dramatically, that's a signal from the marketplace that that commodity, whatever it is, hamburger, steak, breakfast cereal, whatever it happens to be, is in short supply. Otherwise, they'd never be able to charge those kind of prices. And what Snyder points out, most people simply assume that everything will turn out okay somehow. Now, I have optimism about my country, but the farmers are telling us, as he points out loudly, that they can do everything they want to do, and yet if they don't have the things necessary to bring those food supplies in, they have to have the fuel to plant, they have to have the fuel to harvest, they have to have the fertilizer to make sure they fertilize their crops, and they're running into problems with all that, spare parts and everything else. One of the most disturbing occurrences is the massive influx of fires at food plants around the country. 97 of them. In many of those cases, mysterious fires erupt somehow and grow to immense size, even if the firefighters are able to respond very quickly. In fact, just about 150 miles from where I'm standing right now, there was a massive potato plant that went up. A potato processing plant blew up, taken offline for some period of time. Now, some of those fires are devastating. They wipe the plant out. Others just take it offline for a period of time. But when almost everything is running in short supply, and then you short the supply even more, you're going to end up with problems. On Twitter, our friend Steve Moore, the economist, says, the Center for Medicare Services enforces the COVID-19 vaccine mandate for the government. The catch is that those hired to actually enforce the vaccine mandate are themselves exempt from it. Fact is, Steve Moore points out, rules for thee, but not for me, which is the usual way the government operates. And then you've got a problem with airline transportation, which apparently our current transportation secretary, Pete Buttigieg, who couldn't even do a good job of filling the potholes when he was a small town mayor in South Bend, Indiana, he's now decided that airline travel is a problem. And what's his solution to that problem? You see, Buttigieg got booted from a flight. Not booted from a flight, but his flight was canceled, and he had a tough time rebooking it. And all of a sudden, the transportation secretary of the United States of America decides there's a problem because he has been affected directly. Well, between Father's Day and Juneteenth, the revenge travel, this is what they've called it, the season of revenge travel, put a lot of pressure on the airlines. 4,200 additional U.S. flights were delayed over the last weekend. 900 were canceled day before yesterday on Sunday. That pushed the total number of flights interrupted since Thursday to 19,000 flights. And I think I can tell you some of the reasons that those flights are being interrupted. We've got a shortage of airline pilots. And so what does Pete Buttigieg suggest? He says we have to have more customer service agents at the counter. It's as though this guy, you can now tell why he had a tough time being a small-town mayor in Indiana. If he becomes the transportation secretary of the United States, and he thinks the answer to getting more airplanes in the air and passengers to their destinations is getting more customer service agents behind the counter, what, so you have more people explaining to you, we don't have a pilot for that flight? You know that part of the problem is the vaccine mandate, because a number of pilots said, I'm not going to take the jab. And then there were the pilots, and we've told you the stories about pilots who ended up taking the jab and then a short time later ending up with massive heart problems that end up taking them out of the air altogether. Another 200 flights were canceled yesterday. Most of it blamed on pilot and staff shortages, packed planes, and the logistical effects of bad weather. I'm not sure that necessarily explains all of it. And then a piece of good news. I'd always like to give you some good news. We have talked about the issue of transgender athletes for quite a time. And I've told you my steadfast position has been biological males have no business competing against biological females. And I'll give you one good hard example of this that you should take to heart, because it's one of those numbers. If you look up, when did we finally have male athletes who could do a sub-4-minute mile? And the answer is in about the 1950s. So you have men who can run a mile in faster than a minute. When are women going to get to that number? The best women's time I could find, 4 minutes and 19 seconds. And if you say, well, it's only a 19-second gap. If you talk to people who run, if you run track and field, I've never run track and field. I did swim, so I'm concerned about swimming. But in track and field, slicing 2 seconds off your time when you're running elite times like that is going to be a gigantic occasion. The idea that men and women in track and field runnings, for example, the mile, are 19 seconds apart tells you that biology has a tremendous effect. Well, now, the governing body for world swimming has declared that so-called transgender women cannot compete in women's events. And I think that's great. This took effect as of yesterday. The group is called FINA, F-I-N-A. They have adopted a new gender inclusion policy that only permits swimmers who transition before the age of 12 to compete in women's events. Meaning, if you decided to make your transition after that, you are just flat out of luck. There are so many things to do during a summer, and we all want as much free time as we can. If you're a business owner like me, the last thing you want to do is spend your summer sorting through a bunch of resumes, trying to find a great candidate when you could be having a backyard barbecue. And that's why you need ZipRecruiter, to find the great candidates. They do the work for you. Try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Lars. ZipRecruiter uses powerful technology to find and match the right candidates with your jobs. Then review the recommended candidates and find the best candidates, and then you invite them to apply. Soak up all that summer has to offer and let ZipRecruiter do all the work. Ready for the website? ZipRecruiter.com/Lars. Try it for free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Lars. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Tuesday. Now, we are expecting any day now, probably this week, although it doesn't actually have to happen until the end of the current Supreme Court term, and that is right before their opening day in October. I hope it doesn't take that long, but we'll talk about Roe v. Wade when it comes down. But there was another major decision that did come down today, and it's a decision involving education and religious liberty. And because I'm not an attorney or anything like that, I wanted to call on Leah Patterson, who is an attorney with the First Liberty Institute, a great nonprofit that goes to bat on these kinds of issues. Ms. Patterson, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you on the program, because I want you to explain to my audience not just the significance of this in the particular case involving Maine, the state of Maine, but about what significance this decision, Carson versus Macon, could have on the entire country when it comes to religious liberty and education.
Well, I can give you a little bit of background on the case. We're just so excited to see this victory come down today. So in Maine, the state pays school tuition to the public or private school of the student's choice or the parent's choice when they live in a particular school district that does not maintain its own public high school. But up until today, there was a religious exclusion that prohibited the parents from using that benefit at a religious school. And that's what we challenged. That's what the Supreme Court struck down today.
And this one, now you'll understand, I'm a non-lawyer, so please cut me a little slack, because I don't have a JD. But how in the world did anybody think it was legal to say you can spend the money anywhere you want unless it's on a religious school? That seems like First Amendment 101, doesn't it?
Well, you'd think so. You would think so. This law originated back in 1980 when the Supreme Court case law was a little bit different, and the Maine Attorney General thought that the Establishment Clause would prohibit the money from going to religious schools, even though it had been going to religious schools for decades. So that's when this exclusion happened. But the Supreme Court has clarified over a decade ago that allowing religious schools to participate in a tuition benefit program is not actually a violation of the Establishment Clause. So what Maine was arguing here is that it wasn't discriminating against people because they were religious. It was discriminating against them because they used the funding in religious ways. And that was their distinction. They argued that that made a legal difference. Well, this, we argued that that is a distinction completely without a difference, and the Supreme Court agreed.
Well, I mean, because Ms. Patterson, if you had a building code in the city that said what kind of buildings you can build, and you walked in and say, you can build any kind of building you want in our community unless it's a church, in which case you're prohibited from building a church, you'd say, hold on a second. You can't prohibit me. I mean, it's one thing to have the government not fund religion. I get that. But to say you can engage in any kind of free speech as long as it's not religious free speech. You can build any kind of building as long as it's not a religious building. I mean, that one, it almost seems like a distinction. Well, not a distinction without a difference, but it seems like they're drawing a line saying we won't allow you to, you could use it for, I guess, for education that's vocational, education that's satanic. You could do it for anything you want as long as it's not religious. That just seems like it crosses the line very, very clearly. And apparently the Supreme Court agreed.
That is correct. And you know, the bottom line here is that allowing everybody to participate in the program is neutral. That's the whole point of freedom, is that everybody gets to participate regardless of their viewpoint or perspective in seeking that education. So that's what the Supreme Court vindicated today.
Well, and that means that any other religion, it wouldn't have to be the religion in this case, but it could be a Mormon school, it could be a Muslim school, it could be a, you know, Southern Baptist, it could be any of those, and they would still be eligible for that without the government deciding who qualifies and who does not.
That is absolutely right. And actually, a lot of those groups that you just named supported our case through amicus briefs. So this is a case that got a lot of support from people in a wide variety of faith communities, because freedom's good for everyone.
Well, and most of the country is still of a faith, you know, not as much as I'd like this country to follow faith, but most people identify with some faith. Now, what effect is this going to have on other states? And I'll tell you, I make my home in Washington State. Oregon is right next door. Oregon has a horrible history that goes back basically to the Klan about 100 years ago, where the Klan decided to wage war against the Catholics, and they got exceptions or limitations on funding of schools, mostly because the Klan hated the Catholics, and it was anti-Catholicism. I'm not a Catholic. I'm a Protestant, but I don't like anti-Catholicism either. Do you think it'll have an effect on some of the state laws that go to those kinds of issues in other states?
You know, I would not be surprised if it did. And the Supreme Court's been going after those kinds of laws in previous cases as well, like Espinoza, which came before this case. We're seeing the Supreme Court move to really shut down that kind of religious discrimination.
Do you have any, I want to ask you on the Roe case, I'm just curious, do you have any insights as to why that one's taking so long for the court, man, or is it just my perception? Because usually they'll roll out a bunch of big decisions about mid-June, and here we are on the 21st of June, and they still haven't released Roe, even though allegedly we've already seen the alleged draft opinion that was being written months ago.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised to see that wait until the last day of the term. So that would be the end of next week.
Well, but technically, isn't the last day of the term the day before they open back up in October, technically?
Well, I suppose in a technical sense, but the court does release its opinion, all of its pending opinions, before they go on July recess.
On break, yeah. So they could hold it till a Friday night at 5 o'clock, something like that.
Which is very typical for the Supreme Court to do in high-profile cases like this.
So they can get out of town before the mob shows up on the steps? Because you know the mob is going to be there, don't you, Ms. Patterson?
I think the mob's already there, but, you know, it's the thought that counts.
Yeah, and I'm just curious how it is that they, well, I'd love to see. I wish they'd just, after the leak, I wish they'd just dumped it out. Do you think, one last quick question, do you think they'll ever catch the leaker and identify the leaker and punish the leaker?
Oh, I hope so. I certainly hope so.
Well, hope lives, but it's not much of a strategy. Ms. Patterson, it's a pleasure to have you on from the First Liberty Institute.
Thank you so much. Good to be with you.
You betcha. That's Leah Patterson from First Liberty. By the way, yeah, I'm a small business owner. You might know that. I'm a small business owner. But even if you're not, If you've been to a grocery store or a hardware store, you know that America has major supply chain issues. And in times like this, the businesses that succeed, they're the ones who think forward. One of the best ways to stay ahead of that curve is use technology your customers use every day. And that's where Podium comes into play. Podium gives your business the tools to compete with convenience that's offered by bigger businesses like Amazon. Podium lets you communicate with your customers via text message, something that most people use dozens of times every day. Podium is just so convenient and works for basically any business, from plumbing to healthcare, even the dentist or IT. Podium helps customers communicate their needs, pay their bills, get their receipts, and a whole lot more. One jeweler sold a $5,000 ring through his website. See how Podium can grow your business. Watch a demo today at podium.com/Larson. That's podium.com/Larson.